The Speaker of the House of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Robert DeLeo. Bob DeLeo, welcome to Nightside.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you once again for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk to some of your listeners.
Let me first disclose to the audience that Bob DeLeo is a friend of mine. He and I were high school teammates, someone who, in my opinion, has integrity. If you read Scott Lehigh's piece this morning, talked about the work that he has done on reforms of ethics and pensions, transportation and education. But there are some questions that need to be asked, issues that need to be clarified. That's my job tonight, and I want to make it very clear the Speaker has put no questions off limits to me, and therefore I assume to all of you. The first general question, and I do want to, Mr. Speaker, get to what's going to be coming up after January 1st, but right now there is a swirl of controversy up on Beacon Hill about the probation department. I want to get your first, your general reaction to what you read in the Weir report, some 300 pages. I don't know if you've had a chance to read all of the Weir report. You may have, but I'm sure you've read a pretty significant synopsis.
I did, and I've read it. I first thought read it quickly, then I slowly read it at a little slower pace to make sure that I fully comprehended all of that was included in the report. And I have to say that it was a report that I was just brought great anger to me. I was very unhappy to read what was going on at the probation department.
What were you angry about?
Well, what I was angry about was there seemed to be almost a situation where some folks, whether if they were making donations to various candidates, may have been getting jobs. There may have been some situations where maybe probation office workers may have rightly or wrongly, and that there's still a lot to be digested and discussed, were making contributions that should have been made. But the most thing, the biggest thing that I was concerned about is the fact I'm concerned that we get the best qualified candidates to be probation officers. That's what I want to see. And when someone comes up to me and they're seeking a job, whether it's a probation officer or whatever it may be, myself as the Speaker of the House, I look at it as my responsibility, to try to bring the brightest and the best into the fold, into the Commonwealth, whether it's probation or any other state agencies. And I'm concerned that that sort of mantra was not honored by the powers that be when they were interviewing folks in bringing them into the probation department.
Now, I have read, and I believe, if I'm incorrect, correct me, but I've read that you recommended at least 7 people to the probation department, including your godson.
Yes.
Were you convinced of their qualifications, and were there other people who came to you seeking positions in the probation department who you did not recommend?
Yes, on both of those. As a matter of fact, there were a number of candidates who, although they met the various qualifications to be probation officers and student, and because of educational background and work background, were not hired. And I accept that. That's fine. That's what it's all about.
But were there individuals who came to you, Mr. Speaker, and said, "I'd like to get a job," or my son or my nephew or whatever would like to get a job, and you made a determination that even though they might be a loyal supporter, you're not going to forward their recommendation on, or would anyone who would come to you who would ask for a recommendation get one?
Yes, no, not at all. As a matter of fact, not only have I not recommended folks in probation who I didn't feel were or met the minimum requirements, but I also did not. It's common for me after reviewing resumes and reviewing the qualifications for the job, not make recommendations for folks in other state agencies or even private industry as well. Again, I look at my job, Dan. To try to bring the best folks here into the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. When I talk to businesses, whether they come in to see me and they're from other states, they're talking about trying to do business here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I look at it as my role to try to get those people to come to Massachusetts, to do business in Massachusetts, and to create revenue here in Massachusetts and jobs, okay? And I look at it the same way in terms of trying to find the best, the brightest, the most qualified people to work, whether it's probation or any other state agency. I can recommend them, But quite frankly, that's where it ends.
No,
when folks, you know, once it goes to that agency, it's up to them whether they feel that, you know, that person should or shouldn't be hired.
Well, clearly, my reading of the Weir report, there were some people, without going into individual cases, who clearly had some backgrounds that didn't merit working in a probation office. Now, maybe they could work in a number of jobs, but they were people who had what I would characterize as shaky backgrounds, and I wouldn't want to see them in the probation department. I assume that those were the sorts of hires that concern you.
Right, and that's what I meant to convey. You know, those types of people who weren't qualified.
What about taking probation and putting it into civil service and just getting that monkey off your back, off politicians' back, and say, you know, it's going to be a civil service position, just as, let's say, the state police are a civil service position. There'll be an examination. You'll have to pass the examination. Then there'll be some sort of a boot camp. And if you then get through there, I don't think anyone would be making allegations that people are on the state police because they knew a politician, but now people can make that about probation employees.
You know, probably an easy way out. The only problem I've had, having served as a member of the, you know, a local government, as a member of the Board of Selectmen in local politics, and I can tell you that many of the leaders, the mayors, selectmen, councilors in cities and towns have a concern for that, in the sense that if you want to fire that person, you know, to get rid of them because they're not performing properly, it's a whole lot harder if they are part of the civil service, you know, commission. You know, so that brings with it, although it sounds good, and getting into the position may be valuable, trying to get incompetent people out of those positions and fired from those positions presents a whole new you know, whole new issues that cities and towns have had to deal with.
I assume then that means that you would not favor putting probation under civil service.
No, actually, to be honest, I'm looking at everything and anything. And once the day I've read this report, I immediately went down to the governor's office, and I talked to the governor about his plan to put it under parole. He feels that that's the way to go, you know, to take it away from the court system, put it into parole. Yesterday, I met with the retiring Chief Justice Marshall. She was very strong that it should stay where it is, but we have to have new rules and regulations in terms of the hiring process. Today I went over to Boston College and met with Father Monin, the chair of the the Monin Report,
sure,
which talked about taking up the whole court system and what changes should be made in the court system. And he felt very strongly about keeping it in its present place as well, and had a whole host of different other recommendations. And finally, obviously, I've had some discussions with the Senate President and also members. I had lunch, dinner last night, I should say, with some of the new members coming into the House, and they've expressed concerns or issues in terms of where it should go. So I think that this is going to be an issue that's going to be debated. I think it has to be debated thoroughly. But I'm going to say this. When I became Speaker of the House last year, I promised reforms, Dan, as you know. I talked about ethics, I talked about pensions, I talked about transportation, I talked about education reform, and we delivered on all those reforms. And that's what I intend to do with this particular agencies.
Okay.
We're going to make some serious changes, we're going to bring serious reform, and we're going to get the confidence back in the people in our probation department and court system.
Speaker Bob DeLeo, as I mentioned earlier, I've known Bob a long time from high school days, and I make it very clear he's a friend, and I have absolute confidence in his integrity, but there are some difficult questions to ask tonight, and we'll try to ask them. Let me just be clear here, Bob, and you know, we've been around the block a long time.
Sure.
When a politician calls a state agency and requests or suggests that someone be interviewed or be hired, doesn't that give that friend of the politician an incredible advantage over other people who might not be quote-unquote connected?
I'm not sure if I would use the word incredible.
How about just advantage?
What I would hope that My recommendation or another elected official's recommendation would hold some weight, shall I say, based upon my knowledge of the particular candidate. Hopefully that will be one factor that would be considered. But again, let me just say this. At the end of the day, okay, it is my hope that the person making the decision in terms of whether it should be hiring, that they're going to choose the most qualified. What I hope to do is to give them an idea that I know this person, I know their background, and think they would be suited for the particular job. It would then be up to the person making a decision to say, you know what, yeah, they may be qualified, but they're just not the right person. I've had that happen to me on a number of occasions.
What percentage, if you will, of people who you have recommended either within the probation department or other departments have come back as a non-starter?
I don't have a clue in terms of how many haven't been. I would probably say I'd probably be more unsuccessful than successful in terms of people getting hired, but I really don't know.
There are reports that I have read that said that over time the probation department actually has been funded in the budget with more money than they actually requested.
Well, the interesting part, I found that very interesting in terms of your stating that, Dan, because of the fact when I became Speaker of the House, we cut the probation department 14%, probably more than many other state agencies in our budget, 14%. The time when they were funded probably a little bit, well, I'm not sure I'd say more than they had requested, was because we had changed as a legislature during the budget process what their duties were. In particular, when we decided that we were going to implement the GPS system here in Massachusetts to bring a stronger controls on the sex offenders, the anti-gang witness intimidations, domestic violence cases, Corey legislation, that required a completely new additional department, a completely new additional duty that we were going to have to put on probation to make sure that these folks who may be on the street are monitored so we know their whereabouts so they can't bring harm on any other man, woman, child, or whoever. So that's the reason that they may have gotten or they did get a boost in their budget.
Right,
and I'm going to say this one other thing, yep. Dan, on that. When I was chair of Ways and Means and now as Speaker of the House, you know, the budget which comes out, you know, from the governor that's relayed to me almost verbatim. I will have, whether they're secretaries, commissioners, who will come in to make the case that, you know, the money isn't sufficient enough for them to be able to operate efficiently.
All right, fair enough. Just a couple of final quick questions on this, and then I do want to get to some of the other questions that I know are important and going to become very important after January 1st. What is going to happen to the position of Speaker Pro Tem? This was not a position you created. It was created by Sal DeMasi, and State Representative Tom Petrolatti is currently in that position. My understanding is you've relieved him of his duties. Why?
Well, obviously, in terms of reading the report and some of the concerns that were raised about Speaker, you know, Pro Tem Petrolatti and this whole probation situation.
I think he was referring to the whole institution.
I have to think about how the public looks at the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the House of Representatives, and it was my feeling that this was putting a cloud on the House in terms of how people viewed us. So I thought it was important in talking to Speaker Petrolatti, and by the way, I just want to let folks know that he agreed with me that we both felt, and he agreed that it was the best interest of the House and the Commonwealth that he stepped down.
All right, and then a final question. I want to give you a chance. There was a very interesting article in the Herald this morning, which pointed out that the attorney who wrote this report, which is considered to be a fine piece of work, is a partner at Goodwin and Procter, and that one individual law firm has contributed some $207,000 to Bay State politicians since 2002, including Paul Weir himself, and that law firm has received some $4.6 million in state contracts. I think the article in the Herald today, which is an interesting article, does show that there's a lot of involvement and interaction between law firms, state agencies, politicians, campaign contributions, and I think that we all want better government, but I think that probably there are few people in some of these positions who have never at one point maybe themselves reached out to a politician for help on something, if you get my drift.
Yes, and I saw the same article again, and I can understand Dan the frustration of people, whether I listen to the radio, or watch TV, or read it in the newsprint. People are frustrated. I'm frustrated. You know, when you read in terms of what's going on in local government, state government, federal government, and from the day that I took this job, and we all know the history in terms of being Speaker of the House and the various problems.
I think you'd call it a target-rich environment for
I'd have to say that.
Right.
And I understand it. And right. There are some times when I can't appreciate why people think that. But if I wasn't involved in government myself and looking in and saying, well, what the heck are they doing in there? How can we straighten things out? Right. So I understand that. And when I took this job a couple of years ago, I stated that I was going to change things, and I intend to do it. And that's just what I'm going to do with the probation department.
Right. My guest is House Speaker Bob DeLeo. Before we get to calls, when we get to them quickly here, just a couple of other topics, which I know you'll be probably happy to talk about, Mr. Speaker. Casinos, racinos.
Let's talk about probation.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, I think the callers will probably get us back to that. So what's going to happen on casinos, racinos? Governor Patrick put his foot down last September, said, I'm not signing this bill. He won an election. Does that give him the upper hand when racinos or casinos come back up for debate?
I don't think so, in terms of I greatly respect the governor's position, the Senate president's position. I think that at the end of the day, the bill that we put on the governor's desk was a good one. It was done after many hours of discussions, conference committee reports, and a whole lot of give and take from both sides. So I felt I didn't get everything I wanted. Senate President didn't get everything she wanted. The governor didn't get everything that he wanted. But I thought that it was a great compromise.
So you're going to bring that bill up again, or is it just still sitting there on his desk?
It's still sitting on his desk. Obviously, I'm not sure. Well, actually, he sent it back to us for further action. But we're in informal session, so I don't believe that we'll.
So
we'll
you have
see
to refile new legislature. You have to refile a new bill.
Yes.
Okay. But
I suspect that I will do so, or the House will do so, and I'm sure that the Senate, and this time I think that the difference is going to be that we're going to have a little more time. If we take it up earlier in the session, we'll have time that we'll be able to resolve our differences and move forward.
And your position still is three casinos, two racinos?
Well, my original position was two casinos in four casinos. Racinos that changed were in the spirit of compromise to two casinos without any regional restrictions as well as two racinos. Again, I'm willing to discuss in terms of the final product, in terms of the three casinos, the two racinos, with some requirements on regions. I'm willing to discuss that and to compromise.
How are you going to close the $2 billion deficit?
Well, you mean in terms of next year's fiscal budget that we're going to be talking about?
Well, I think we're still, aren't we still running behind this year? Are tax collections still behind? I thought that even for this year, this current fiscal year, we're going to end up with a shortfall.
No, actually, this current fiscal year, we're above benchmark.
Oh, okay.
Where we plan to be, Dan. That's been somewhat good news. Massachusetts, as opposed to other states, we're about $413 million above benchmark.
Good, okay.
So we're in fairly good shape.
Okay. Now, can you promise my audience, who overwhelmingly voted to override the liquor, alcohol, and wine tax, that there will be no repeal by the legislature of that?
I can't promise that no one's going to file it. Yeah. I don't see it being done.
Okay.
I haven't heard of any appetite to do it. It's my feeling that I'm just as concerned as everyone else. You and I know, and everyone listening knows, about the issues and the problems of substance abuse, alcohol abuse here in the Commonwealth. And that money was a very, very valuable tool to address that issue. Having said that, I think that right now, putting on my thinking cap, we have to find other ways of funding those programs.
Okay. How'd you vote on that?
I'm sorry?
How did you vote? Did you vote yes or no?
I voted against the repeal of the law.
Let's get a couple of phone calls in here before the next break, and then it's you and the callers for the balance of the show.
Okay.
Let's go to Sean in Holliston. Sean, welcome to Nightside. You're on with House Speaker Robert DeLeo.
Hi, Mr. Speaker. How are you tonight?
Hi. How are you, Sean?
Good. Dan, great show. I like what you do there. It's great. I got a quick question. I'm more concerned about local stuff, but I'm concerned with you mentioned collection tax problem, things like that. On the streets being able to be plowed this winter coming up in a snowy winter season, how that's going to play out. And if it's going to be more on the town, are we talking overrides? Or just a quick question there. I know you got some budget constraints coming up.
Okay, thanks. So this is going to be the million-dollar question. Now, the biggest problem we're hearing is in terms of what's going on with money for our cities and towns.
But, of course, I'm going to say, what snow? It's December. It hasn't snowed yet. Well, keep your fingers crossed, Sean.
Well, last year was funny, Dan. I used to pray and I used to cross my fingers and do every other thing to hope we were going to have a nice mild winter, and look what happened.
Yes.
Having said that, I think Sean's what the concern he's raising is correct. I mean, whether it's snowplow or providing proper local aid, and I will tell you that being a former selectman from the town of Winthrop, I am very well aware of what's going on in our cities and towns in terms of trying to ends meet. That's why local aid has always been one of my, if not the most, my top priority, to make sure that we provide enough money for our cities and towns so that they can provide services. One of the couple of things that we've done as part of the municipal relief package in particular was to allow more regionalization of services. So if communities want to enter into agreements with each other to provide more mutual aid, combined purchasing, they can now do so by some of the laws that we had passed last year. I think, Dan, something you've probably have read extensively, as well as all the folks listening, is the issue of healthcare and health insurance. I think the mayors and selectmen have made a strong case in terms of that's a place where we can see some savings. On the other hand, the unions have expressed displeasure with that as being an issue relative to interfering with collective bargaining. So I'm in the process now of trying to get the municipal officials, the union officials together, to make sure that we can come up with some type of resolution, whereas we're not interfering with contracts while at the same time being able to save our cities and towns thousands and thousands, in some cases millions and millions of dollars.
Sean, thank you for the question.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you for taking that. I appreciate
All right.
it.
Thank you, Sean.
Let me try to get one more person in here from the break, 617-254-1030, Kathy in Central Massachusetts. Kathy, welcome. You're on Nightside with Dan Ray. Say hi to Speaker Bob DeLeo.
Good evening, Speaker. How are you?
Oh, hi, Kathy. Where are you? Central Mass, you say?
Yes, Lunenburg, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Out in Unitil territory. Leads me to my question. I just wanted to understand what your position is regarding the municipal choice legislation in utilities, what your thoughts are on it.
Well, the thing I was involved with last time, as a matter of fact, with, if I'm correct, with Representative Benson, Representative Di Natale, I think Representative Gobi and a lot of the folks out there in the west in that particular section, I took a tour after that horrific ice storm that had occurred. And when I visited that area, Dan, you may appreciate this, I was chair of Ways and Means at the time.
I remember that trip, as a matter of fact.
And what I saw was, with trees down, it was like being in an area that just been attacked during a war. And what I had heard considerably was the fact of some of the folks were really displeased with the Unitil I believe it's Unitil.
It is Unitil, and as a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, we had the president of the company. He was going to come on and take phone calls just like you're doing tonight and talk to listeners. And after repeated cancellations, he finally just backed out. He has never come on the program. And I have great sympathy, as Kathy knows, for the folks that live up. It's Lunenburg, I think. Is it Leominster, Ashby. Kathy? Ashby,
oh, Leominster.
Townsend?
No, it's Ashby, Townsend, Fitchburg, and Lunenburg. Yep. Leominster, which I can see from where I live, actually has National Grid.
Yep, okay, and I misspoke on that, but I know that those four communities, Unitil has a lot of communities up in central, in southern New Hampshire and into the state of Maine as well, but I think they've been very unresponsive to these people.
Right, and what we did in legislation that we did just last year, at the urging of the representatives of the representatives and senators in that area, was we put we gave the cities and towns much more leeway in terms of if their utility is not performing as they should be, if they don't show any capacity to be able to perform, that they can take it up with the Department of Public Utilities, and you know we can move on and get someone who can handle. You know the electrical requests in that particular area, so I do think we gave more power to state regulators, so that now the issues that occurred before hopefully can be more efficiently and more quickly addressed by the state than it has been in the past.
Kathy, I would encourage you to be in touch with the Speaker's office and remind him of your phone call, because this is an issue that's of concern to me, and I think the more the Speaker knows about it, the more support you're going to get.
Was there anything else, Kathy, in particular that you...
Well, this municipal choice legislation would open up the door to competition, and it would improve our service and our rates in this area, which is what we greatly, greatly need.
Yeah.
We appreciate the bill that was passed. And
okay, I'm
that
sorry, that's what I thought.
I know of what you speak, and we're very appreciative of that because, you know, God knows what the winter will bring.
So you want to, Kathy, you want to go a couple of steps further with other legislation.
Right.
We'll work with your state reps and remind the Speaker that you talked about it on Nightside, okay?
We'll do so. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy. Let's go to Donald in Watertown. Hey, Donald, how are you?
Hi, Dan. Hi, Mr. Speaker.
Hi, Donald. How are you?
Great, great. I'd like to bring it back to the probation department issue. I work for a large corporation, and we have yearly ethics training.
Yeah.
We do contracting with the government. And my question is, does the state workers and the politicians have some sort of an ethics training class, maybe a yearly class where they kind of learn what ethics is about? And if there's a problem, maybe they can have a dial a hotline and raise an issue.
Yeah, that's a great question. And as a matter of fact, when I became speaker, I highlighted ethics as was one thing that I felt we had to address. So what I brought in here to the House was the fact that for the first time in history, every member of the House and every employee of the House, and I believe it applies, I think they did in the Senate as well, that everyone had to go to an ethics training course, and that everyone had to go through a questionnaire, if you will, a test, quiz, whatever you want to call it, to make sure that they understood what the ethics laws are here in the Commonwealth, and if they have any questions, most importantly, if there's ever a gray area that they're not sure what they should or shouldn't be doing, that they have a number that they can call. I can tell you that and this is an issue which I brought up actually with the new reps. We have about 40 new reps coming in, and I had dinner with all of them, and I said, if you ever have any questions, do not act until you get an opinion from the Ethics Commission or the Office of Campaign and Political Finance or whatever agency it may be to decide whether it is proper. So yes, that there is something in place now that we just put in place again for the first time ever, to have ethics training and to have ethics testing. And as a matter of fact, that will come up again every on a 2-year cycle, I believe. So once we're reelected again, then the same process will will have to be adhered to.
Donald, I want to follow up on your question. Mr. Speaker, today I was talking with one of my colleagues here at WBZ in anticipation of our conversation tonight, and he made the point to me that we're CBS employees. So, for example, I can't compete on any of the CBS programs. I'm ineligible. My family's ineligible. You know how that works. You know, I'm excluded. Would you be in favor of legislation which would say that elected officials cannot make recommendations on behalf of individuals for employment within the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? It would take a burden, and I'm sure a burden off of you and your colleagues, and it would eliminate, if not impropriety, the appearance of impropriety.
Well, I would have a problem with that. In the sense that, Dan, again, I look at my, I take my job very seriously as a speaker and a state representative, and I feel that if I have a person out there who is qualified and can best serve the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in whatever position that may be, you know, then they shouldn't be disqualified, if you will, because I gave them that I couldn't give a recommendation. If I'm in a position to give a recommendation, whether it's me, you, or whoever, I think we should have that ability to do so. That's not the root of the problem. The root of the problem is to make sure that the folks who are hiring are just hiring the most qualified people.
No, they wouldn't be disqualified, but they would have to submit an application just like someone who didn't know a politician. It would level the playing field. Hey, Donald, thank you for the call.
Okay, Dan.
Appreciate
thank
it. You. Going out to down to Pembroke, Carmine. Hi, Carmine. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
We're doing great. Say hi to
House. Hi, Carmine.
Thanks for my call. I appreciate it.
Go right ahead.
I'm concerned about health care, and I'm wondering with the upcoming session if there's going to be any programs or anything to address that.
Yes, that's Carmine. That's another good question. But interesting the questions tonight, Dan. I first of all feel that people in Massachusetts or New England, in particular, starting to think about winter with the first two questions.
Yes,
you know, with the snowplows,
sure.
And I think the the Leominster situation. But anyways, on the healthcare issue. I think this is next to the budget. I think this is probably going to be the first and foremost issue that we're going to have to discuss. We all know we're all faced with the issue of health care costs, the cost of health care, insurance, the drain health care costs are on local, state, and federal budgets, and that's going to be front and center in terms of one of the issues that we're taking up. Already, we've already had discussions with the providers, insurance companies, if you will. But one of the things that I like to, to make sure of that at the end of the day, the person who's seeking medical care, that they're going to be able to seek it with the person that they want to see for a particular illness. So I'm hoping that that's going to be part of it. But beyond that, that's just a little side editorial. To answer your question, Carmine, yes, that's going to be an issue. That's going to be a major issue that we're going to have to address. It's going to be a very difficult issue because there's so many different sides of this issue, but it will be something we'll be addressed in the next legislative session.
Carmine, you sound as if you're young. Are you one of the folks who are obligated to get health insurance, and maybe you're not necessarily interested in having health insurance because of your comparative youth?
I think that's exactly where I fit into.
Okay, that was just an intuition on my part. So how old are you?
I'm just about 24.
Okay, and you'd like to save your money and basically figure you could get through the year. Bob,
I
know the law doesn't allow anything here, but do you at least understand the frustration? I'm sure, Bob, when you and I were 24, we probably didn't have great health care, and we figured we'd be okay and put a few extra bucks in our pocket.
Yeah, right. And the other interesting part is, I mean, we've had a tremendously successful health care law here in the Commonwealth. We have 97% of the people in Massachusetts that are covered now. By insurance. So I think, as opposed to maybe what's going on in Washington and maybe other states, we've been successful in terms of providing health care.
Carmine, thank you very
thank
much
you,
for
Carmine.
Your call.
Thank you. Thank you, Speaker.
Thanks.
You're doing a great job. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
All right, let me get Kate and Melrose. Kate, I'm going to get you down the wire here. We got less than a minute for your question. What would you like to ask?
Oh, my God. Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for taking my question.
Hi, Kate.
I don't think you're going to have enough time for this one, though. But
Well, give it a shot.
I'm just wondering... raising a young family here. I'm wondering what you're doing for just a regular working family during really, quite frankly, very difficult economic times.
Great question. Bob, I know you don't have a lot of time, but what difference can the legislature make for someone?
Oh, we can make a whole lot of difference, and I think that since I became speaker, that's been one of the major issues I've tried to address, whether it's with the workforce training funds that we've used out in Chicopee to make sure that people at the Callaway Golf Company are, you know, have the skills to learn how to make golf clubs here as opposed to sending those jobs, you know, to China. Whether it's the giving tax breaks, the film tax credits, so we keep those films being done here, and we can help our film industry, our hotel industry, our food industry, and a number of other industries as well. So with workforce training, I think most important thing, one of the things we can do with some of the revenue we have is to get people involved with our community college system. I provided for a system wherein you're going to be able to get a community college education, and at the end of the day, hopefully be better prepared for the economy of tomorrow here in Massachusetts. But the other thing, and I'm sorry if I'm speaking fast because I know I've got very limited time, one of the other issues I'm looking at, obviously, Dan, is that issue of gaming. We're talking about 15 to 18,000 construction jobs. We're talking about money for local aid, for education, for various projects in cities and towns, for our colleges, our universities, but most importantly, the 15 to 18,000 jobs. I think that's the way we have to go. I think that it's very difficult in these difficult times to be talking about, you know, the raising of taxes. I think the way we get ourselves out of this economic problem, the way we have been getting ourselves out, and I think that that's what puts us in a little better position than any other states, is by creating jobs, 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 and more jobs.
All right, Kate,
and that's going to be, you know, my feeling in the session ahead.
Katie, got a lot in.
Thank you for raising that issue. Sorry I had to answer it so quickly.
All right, good night. Speaker DeLeo, thanks for being available as the new session comes into existence in early January.
Yep.
Love to get you back. As you know, and you know the questions that you get good questions on this program.
Yeah, I certainly
thanks for
do.
Taking the tough questions earlier in the hour.